We're in the field today, Barnea. Who are we with?
Dr. Yuval Gadot is from the Institute of Archaeology at Tel Aviv University and is initiating an excavation here in the city of David. And people don't know about it, so we thought it would be a nice thing to tell them.
So if you had to pick a day where the weather has actually cooled off a little bit, there was even a few drops of rain this morning in Efrat. I don't know about here in Jerusalem.
Also here in Jerusalem.
So pretty nice working conditions. What are we looking for here? What is the research objective of this season of excavation?
Okay. First of all, thanks for coming and being a guest here at the dirtier part of town. We initiated this excavation. We are actually, and I hope your viewers later will be able to see it, not far away from the Kidron, on the slopes of the city of David, and not at the heart of the city. And we are excavating here because we want to understand the story of the city from its edge. Not until now, most of the excavations were going into the center, looking for the palaces and looking for the main core, let's say the main course. But we think that, and I think that the edge of the city is also something to add up to the story. First of all, the city expansion and the time that it expands and the time that it shrinks will reflect things that are happening at the center. So if we get the story of when is the city expanding all the way to where we are, and when is the city away from here, maybe it will help us understand the pace of changes that are happening that are bigger political events.
Okay, before we get into the meat and potatoes, so to speak, of this particular excavation, maybe talk about the areas of research that you've been involved with before this, and then we can focus in on what we're doing now.
I came here after, I think you interviewed me about this excavations at the Rephaim Valley, where we looked for Jerusalem hinterland, the rural land that supports Jerusalem. And I've been so many years at Ramat Rachel. And so I've been walking around Jerusalem for quite a while. And the option to dig at Jerusalem itself is like adding up to this story. So it's kind of a very long project that every time puts the emphasis somewhere else, so to speak.
Your excavations in the hinterland of Jerusalem revealed an understanding of what was happening in the biblical period and the sudden need for agriculture installations and the relationship between Judah and other empires. And your excavations, together with Professor Oded Lifshitz and Manfred Oming in Ramat Rachel, led to new understandings, which are still percolating through, of Assyria, Babylon, Persia, interacting with Judah. So all this comes from outside.
Yeah. But in a way, this project will be different. Because until now, we walked around, not just Jerusalem, let's say into the periphery, not the periphery of Judah, but not the center of Judah as Jerusalem is. And what we noticed at Ramat Rachel for sure, and I think now also this is coming out from my work at Nachal Rephaim, but not just from where I'm excavating, also from collecting data of 60 and something excavated sites all around Jerusalem, is that the story of these villages does not connect strictly only with Jerusalem. There's a kind of a time gap. Jerusalem, who knows when does it expand from what it was in the 10th, 9th century? Let's say that it starts somewhere in the early 8th century to get larger. The villages, as far as I can see, only pop up in a way in the 7th century. So there's a kind of a delay. Jerusalem grew, now they are looking for grounds. Also, the empires are coming. This is Ramat Rachel, and so on.
But then,
these villages, Jerusalem disappears. Okay, 586, Jerusalem definitely is destroyed. Nobody is arguing about that. And if we go to earlier periods, then these villages should have disappeared together with Jerusalem, because there's no city to support anymore. But they don't. Some of them survive. It's not that all of them survive. Some of them survive. And this rural area is somehow alive until well into the Persian period, and maybe even to the Hellenistic. So the story between these villages and the city is a bit different, and it relates to Ramat Rachel. But one of the biggest questions when we speak about expansion and decline is, and that's a big argument, I just said it in passing now, is when did exactly Jerusalem started expanding? Everybody agrees that Jerusalem in the 9th, 10th century is not a big city. Okay. There might be arguments about larger or smaller, but nobody thinks that it's the same as it was in the 7th century. So we have the 7th century is one peak. We have the 10th, 9th century that we know that it's not as big. Nadav Neiman thinks that the growth process of Jerusalem in the 8th century was a very slow process, that it began somewhere in the 9th century and slowly it grew and grew and grew until it reaches zenith in the 7th century after Sanherib campaign. Israel Finkelstein, on the other hand, claims that this is a very sudden growth and it has nothing to do with demography or, you know, slow success, but actually with refugees coming from Israel into Jerusalem and settling in Jerusalem and turning Jerusalem into something that was much bigger than before. Excavating here in the more domestic areas of Jerusalem, trying to make a better dating of the walls that we know that existed around Jerusalem, might help in resolve this discussion. When exactly did Jerusalem start expanding? Is this a slow process or are we seeing a very sudden event? So that is where the bigger picture connects to where we are here.
That's fascinating. If I recall correctly, there's a suggestion that the reason for the hinterland of Jerusalem developing in the 7th century is that since Lachish and since the Shvela, the foothills are destroyed extensively by Sennacherib, as depicted in the three prisms that we have of its destruction, if they're still under the Assyrian yoke and they still have to be productive both for their own populace and perhaps to take taxes, they had to now start developing areas which had not been developed until then. So even if it's not the best land possible where you would put your vineyards, but we're going to have vineyards and we have to keep producing.
This is part of our claim that the tragedy of 701 forced them to look for other solutions. I don't think that Nachal Rephaim is forced. I think that they were there probably before. It's just that now that they were more efficient. This was the entire reliance was on that area and the Sorek to the north. Before that, they had a more mixed economy, let's say.
Now, how are you connecting to that which has come out? We've had excavations here. Rani Reich put out a book of 150 years of excavations in Jerusalem.
But Rani Reich also laid the foundation for these excavations in his book. When you read his what he wrote, you read about areas of excavations, and you read hypotheses that he presents, and he presents also problems. So he excavated something like 50 meters behind us. Walked along, it was known before, a water channel that is dating to the Middle Bronze Age. And
How many years ago is that?
3600, something like that. 1600 BCE. He found this water channel. This is a channel that takes water from the spring. And he supposed that somewhere where we are now sitting is the place where it turned eastward and went into the Kidron itself, and there was another pool. Okay, now he saw.
I felt my chair was on the slant. Did you sense
that? Exactly. Now he thought he saw that from walking inside the channel. Okay, the channel is way under the ground. We are supposed to reach the same point as is that he thinks that the channel turns eastward from above ground. Okay, and maybe give it a better date and maybe see that it is or it isn't going into the Kidron Valley. So that's one option. Then when you read more in the book, when he looks through the channel, they kind of made a test trench over there, and he found a city wall. Now, this city wall is situated well into the Kidron Valley, in a place that was not expected. And according to his date, it dates exactly to the same time as the city wall that was built halfway through the slope and discovered by Shiloh and Kenyon. Okay, so there's now... There isn't any city wall for 9th and 10th century, but we have two walls for the 8th century. One halfway through the slope and one in the Kidron.
Would that be a continuation or an inner wall and an outer wall?
No, either inner and an outer, or that there is another neighborhood here, kind of in between the walls. Either you take Lachish as a model, and then you have two walls, but then nothing built in between, or you take the fact that there was another neighborhood, so there was another need, more need to build another wall, or maybe the wall up there is not a wall, and it's simply a revetment because of the slope. Maybe the wall below us is not wall. Maybe it's not dated to the 8th century, like they're saying. There are many questions. He found it in a very small segment, very impressive wall. I think one of the most impressive walls that were found in Jerusalem. I'm hoping to get it in a bigger section, find the wall, see the neighborhoods existing or not existing next to it, being able to date it more precisely. and then come out, and exactly this is the accordion that I'm looking for. When did the city reach this place? When was this place abandoned?
You strike a very nice chord with the accordion, because I used to play accordion. Okay. So I just my hands started to move with the...
I knew there had to be wind involved in some level.
Yes, yes, but it doesn't have to be hot wind.
Yeah, that's right.
So let's please, for our listeners, I'm sure that some people are following every step here, but let's go a little bit to the story here. We have a gradual destruction that itself is a discussion. We have a gradual destruction of the northern kingdom of Israel in stages. We have this question that you've posed, is Jerusalem suddenly swelling from an influx of refugees, or is it a gradual process of success either way? And then Yigal Shiloh finds a city wall from the 8th century, which is estimated to be the time of Hezekiah. And then he finds houses outside the wall, in which case the question is, why weren't they inside the wall? That was the state of
outside
the question,
the
that outside the wall.
Why are they outside?
Why are they outside?
He called them extramural quarters. He saw some houses from the 8th century, more or less on the level where we are. And he said, okay, these are extramural. He didn't really pay attention. For him, the wall was the end of the excavations. He didn't really, it was, it's not a coincidence probably that until now it's not published. So the main parts of his digs in Area E where we are were published by Alon de Groot and Hani Weinberg. But these two areas that are kind of sloping towards us, Yigal Shiloh neglected them. He said, okay, the city ends there. You know, two or three schleppers living outside, I'm not going to make a big deal out of them. But he had no idea about another wall that's waiting for us below. Okay. And that's why the entire understanding of that area has changed the moment the lower wall.
When
was
that found?
1997, I think, seven, something like that, yeah. It's all there in Oni Reich's book.
Okay, but just so that, so decades later. So now you do have a lower wall, and there are houses in between this upper wall, which is either defensive or
event. I'm hoping to find these wall houses. They're not nobody. Expects.
You have houses up there and a wall up there.
Okay.
Down that way, 50 meters further up north, there's a piece of a wall. You're looking to. You're
find,
hoping to find
the neighborhood that is between the two walls, if they did exist at the same time. Okay. I'm waiting for these houses. I'm waiting for the wall itself to surface out, and to date it, because you know. This was the first excavation, the first time the wall was exposed. Let's see what this section tells us.
You raised a point, Yuval, in an earlier visit here, that the part of the question is the houses which are already excavated from Yigal Shiloh do not show signs of Babylonian destruction.
No, they are dating only to the 8th century. And it's something that, as far as I know, I'm not sure here, but I think that in every excavation that were conducted downslope, whenever the Iron Age was discovered, I think also the houses, Oni Reich has these two houses with the rock cutting inside, strange rock cutting, they are also 8th century. The city somehow shrunk a bit back with the years.
There was a building freeze, clearly.
Exactly. Yeah, nothing's changed under the sun.
So that's fascinating. So there were houses, they could have been used, the city expanded, at that time it's on the Western Hill in the Jewish Quarter area, and other areas there.
It could be, I think Oni Reich suggested it, that some of the houses here, you know, this is not the best place to live in the city, it's hot, it's sloping, when rain comes, everything slopes down, the slope.
We experienced that just now, didn't we?
Exactly. When it could be that when the Western quarters were built, they said, okay, we move too fast here, let's go there. So the expansion of the city westward enabled this neighborhood to be neglected again.
But that means that when I'm coming into just before the Babylonian destruction, I do not have any housing pressure where I have to come back to these houses. They stay empty.
Yeah, as far as I know, let's find them again and see the dating better, but as far as I know, there are no signs of Babylonian destruction in that area.
So, in terms of seeing the dating better, I noticed what's going on right outside this door. Mm-hmm. Somebody delicately looking through. I noticed all the bags here of carefully washed bags of what was dug out, and we were just sitting at the picnic table.
But not wet sifting. I didn't see. The,
slow down. We were saying the post-what's the thing, and we just watched the jug come out of the ground and come over to you, and you said, handle it only with a juglet. With a juglet. Handle it only with gloves, and it's market for residual analysis. You are part of this massive program, which Israel Finkelstein and others have successfully gotten a grant to track the origins of early Israel and use, I think, 10 different methods of science. Can you talk in general a little bit about that program? Because that's an interest by itself. And then how you're implementing it here.
Okay, I'm not implementing it, I'm implementing the techniques.
The techniques.
Okay, the idea of science and archaeology is, why not get more out of less? Okay. And that is what's happening. The techniques enable us to get further than the eye sees. And this was introduced used into prehistory first by Weizmann Institute, Professor Steve Weizmann.
Weiner.
And then Yisrael Finkelstein offered him to collaborate and to move into the biblical era, which is it's his historical record. So there is another, like, you're getting another input. You don't have just the archaeology and then the microarchaeology. Now you have the microarchaeology, the archaeology, and the historical records. Can you create a bigger picture? DNA of humans. Can we speak about movements through the DNA? DNA of animals, pig DNA, for example. Can we say where exactly did the pigs that we see, their bones in the excavations, are they original to the land of Israel? Or there are any immigrants?
Ethnic marker.
Yes, not that ethnic marker, that they brought the immigrants with them, pigs from outside.
From a particular strain of pigs were brought in from outside, because we had wild boar here in the country for a very long time.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one track. Can we use chemical analysis to get to know what was inside the vessels and so on? And then we can speak about trade and what exactly was traded. And administration, the Lamelech jars, the Yahad jars, can we say something about their content, which tells us about the bureaucracy of the kinghood, not just a simple jar, what was in it. So that's the main idea. What you're seeing here is the fact that, you know, when you see these techniques, you say, okay, they are good for knowing the origins of Israel or the creation of Israel, but they can serve us also in other research works. What I'm excavating now is what most expect to find outside of the city, and this is garbage. People are throwing their garbage out of the houses, or the garbage is brought over more, let's say, efficiently. We have a garbage layer here from the Roman times. Garbage is rich. There's everything in there.
I was going to say, their garbage is far more interesting than my garbage. I mean,
I'm not sure.
Just looking as I was going
just
through.
Wait.
Yeah, wait another 10 years and people will want to know about you. If somebody offers archaeologists an option to come and dig Chiria and get to know Israel in the 50s, this is fascinating. It's not just what, you know, what they did, it's what they believed, or what everything is coming out of the garbage. The houses are here, their life, their values, everything is put into the garbage. So we are exposing these layers, and that's why you see them through the process, trying to get to know what animals people ate here in the Roman times. Is it only kosher animals? Did they eat other kind of animals? We can even go into the way the animals were slaughtered, because we have the bone assemblage is huge. This was already tested by a PhD guy, Ram Buchnik, from Hebrew University, who did his PhD on these garbage slopes. But he is an zoo archaeologist. So his work was centered around animal bones. We are going through the entire variety. Pottery, what was pottery used for? I'm excavating now here. I'm seeing, let's say, that the juglet that you just saw now had one kind of perfume. And let's say that we have another 10 jugglers like that, all of them have the same perfume. Let's hope, okay? Doron Ben-Ami is excavating in Chanyon Givati. He's excavating the living quarters of the same era, more or less. Maybe in another...
You might be able to match that.
Or this match. Say there's a difference. The pattern over there is of...
In the same period.
In the same period. Right. There are differences in the sectors of the city. Joe Ziel is excavating the same layers... Dirt layers at the Bet Mayan, just above the spring. Maybe he will get other results, or maybe he will get the same results. This is the door that we are opening now.
That's fascinating. I just want our listeners to know that the Antiquities Authority is giving us permission to interview Doron and Joe as well to provide you with the total picture. It just didn't work out for today, but we will put together that puzzle.
So we have the three of us just asked Dvori Namder, Dr. Dvori Namder, from now she's, I think, she was from the Weizmann Institute, but I think now she's moving to the Hebrew University, to do a very large residue analysis project centered at Jerusalem through the ages, Iron Age, through the ages and through the neighborhoods. Okay. Jerusalem should be looked at as one site with all these excavations. And so we'll get a spatial picture and we'll get a diachronic picture of what was used when and where and why.
It's fascinating. There is a gate called Shar Ashpot that's mentioned in verse. It's mentioned in the Mishnah. And there's a contemporary one, which is definitely not where the ancient one was, but the idea was that garbage gets thrown down, and we see it around us here also.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. And one of Ronnie Reich's fascinating theories...
talked about the fish bones.
The fish bones,
yes.
And therefore an explanation of the fish gate. So first of all, it shows you that there's wealth because they're bringing in fish from some distance,
right?
Which shows that there was much more to that Iron Age Jerusalem period than Kathleen Kenyon was ready to admit in her time.
Because they still haven't found the freshwater lake of Jerusalem.
Yes. Right. And secondly, he wants to reinterpret the Greek pronunciation and say the Teropian Valley does not mean the Cheesemaker's Valley, it means the Fish Valley, and goes together with the Fish Gate, which was one of the fun things that I saw in his book and heard from him. So, let's review. You're here in the periphery on the outside of the city. You're looking to see if you can find the connection between a piece of a wall that was found further down in the valley and a wall higher up and houses in between. And in the meantime, you're excavating garbage of many different periods. Can you tell us about some interesting things which have come out of the garbage?
The garbage is filled with...
Because we have to fill our story. Yeah.
The garbage is filled with niceties, we call it. Tons and tons of pottery. I will show you later. Your listeners will have to believe what you see in your eyes. Tons and tons of pottery. Tons of Jewish ritual purity vessels made of
stone,
chalk stone. All broken, nothing complete. The jugger that you saw today is a very unique moment here. Usually we find only smashed pottery. Tons of animal bones. Tons of organic material.
What kinds of organic material?
Seeds, charcoal. I don't know how to recognize the wood, but it will all pass to somebody who knows how to do that.
Lifshitz?
No, mm-hmm. She's retired, and we'll be working in with Dr. Daphna Langot. Tons of coins. Unbelievable, the amount of coins. Even depressing in a bit.
10, 50, 500?
By... For Wednesday, we had...
Persian, Roman...
No, Roman.
Wait.
First of all, the number. 476 coins were found until Wednesday. From then, I think another 80 were found.
Wow.
And these coins are all of them. This is what gives us a very good control over the waste. To the last 50 years of Jerusalem, before its destruction in 70 AD.
But nobody throws coins away.
No, these are tenable. This is something that falls out of the pocket. This is coming.
They're copper. What kind of coins?
Bronze.
Are bronze. Yeah.
Yeah. Some. Most of them are bronze. No value. Most of them are more or less more the same as I call them, but they give a very secure date. Okay. If this was an area that dirt accumulated for 100 and something years, then you'll find a range of coins. But the coins are all situated within the last 50 years, and it's repeating all the time. So there was a change in the habits of how people deal with their refuge. 50 years, 100 years, something like that, before the destruction, I don't know, I can't say the date exactly, they shifted from either throwing the garbage somewhere else or just throwing them out of the window, like people still do in some places, to a very organized machine-like garbage disposal that brings all the dirt to the Kidron. And throw it down, and maybe also to Mount Zion.
The city dump.
But here it means it's expected to get washed away in the rainy season.
Yeah, and we see also maybe earth layers of maybe winter wash. We see very a seriation of garbage and then earth. Garbage, earth. It could be that it's winter wash. It could be that they covered it intentionally. Anyway, it's a big shift in the life of the city. And you have, many questions come out when you define it as a garbage disposal area. Then many questions come out.
So So your research question is biblical period, 8th century, 7th century. You have to deal also with Middle Bronze. You also have a research question of the Middle Bronze period in the water systems. But right now what you're finding is from the end of the Second Temple and reflects a completely different period so far.
I'll give you an example of Muhammad Akhir. Ed Lifshitz, Professor Ed Lifshitz from Tel Aviv University, he came there because he wanted to know about Muhammad Akhir in the Persian period. But when you're excavating a site, you're excavating a site. You have to deal with its entire history. And I think also when you deal with its entire history, you understand things from nearer periods. It helps you reflect back on the back.
You're reflecting Tel Aviv University, the long durée.
Exactly. Somehow the long durée, not just that, site formation. You understand? I now see from the way the layers of the dirt are lying, the slope. I think I can start understanding the way the rock is shaped. Okay, so this might give me an indication of where to expect to find more remains of the earlier periods. Okay, so when you choose a site, you have to deal with the site, okay, with the way it formed until the last days. I'm looking.
You're the guardian of the history of Israel in this spot. When exactly, it's a destructive process. You have to pull out whatever you can.
So let me ask a question about this spot. We generally,
this spot is a hot spot.
There's no despots here, but we generally deal with in archaeology. We like to look at stratigraphy, and because we're on a slope. There is no stratigraphy at all. You can't speak of.
If there's any stratigraphy here, it's like Ubadia, if you know Ubadia, the prehistoric site. Layers are one next to the other. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we move. I don't know how to say
a little bit away.
Yeah,
it's almost vertical.
Yeah, instead of up and down, it's
side by side,
and until we at least get the idea of the slope, then maybe we'll be able to dig it. But we first have to make a section. To see how the layers are positioned.
To cut through all the layers to the bottom of
exactly.
The cake.
Exactly. Yeah. And it won't be the bottom of the cake.
But now
it
you
will
know,
part.
Right. Yes.
It will
you
be
have
the
to cut
part.
In towards the mountain bedrock from the outside.
Exactly. Now, at the moment, I see differences of the same layer is exposed in two different points in 3 meter, the depth of 3 meters. So when I go west, upward, upslope, the same Roman layer is 3 meters higher. Then I see it in the east, closer to the Kidron. So the slope is very dramatic here.
If I were to play, let's imagine, and there were no homes here, no Arab homes and no Jewish homes, and there was no construction from the city of David, right? And you had to choose an area to focus, to begin a broad-scale excavation of this area, right? How would you start? How would you look at the site Begadol, from a general point of view, and then how does that fit in with what you're doing here specifically?
It's a very hard question. I think, I don't know, maybe I'm coming from where I started, so, but I think the best the archaeologists are knows they know how to do sections. So if I was able to take this section that I'm doing now all the way down to the Kidron and all the way up
to the top.
To the top of the hill. Then I will get the story of Jerusalem. This is more or less what
Kenyon, a super slice.
This is what Kenyon attempted to do but failed. Gave up at one point because of the amount of terrace walls and so on. To go from, imagine, area G. Even higher. Eilat Mazar excavations, then area G, then there's an unexcavated area, then she has the place where she excavated the two walls, the Iron Age and Middle Bronze, just by the entrance to Warren Shaft, all the way down to the spring. Okay. So we are now this down to the spring. But if I have to go, if I could go from here upward and here downward, this would be... But I remember that people are living here, and I think livings have priority over
always.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the last question for the moment: who can the public involve themselves in your excavation at any time? Is there a way they can register?
Volunteer
just through my email. There's a form that you need to fill in.
On the Antiquities Story website, there's
exactly,
a form.
Exactly. And then when you're insured, you can come and volunteer. We have. Until now, 3 or 4 people that volunteered here.
How long is this excavation going to continue for this season?
Another month, and then we are going. We're going to stop for 3 months, and then renew our excavations in the late autumn until rain comes.
Somewhere. Because you're going to wear your other hat, which you're wearing now, of the Lautenschlager Azenka excavation.
And I have to somehow start publishing all of the material here. There's a lot of work that comes out, and there's
you have
no.
A year for that? No. How long do you have to for that?
To publish. At least to start, we need 2 or 3 months of organizing the material, passing it to people who write about it. What we have here is a lot of the same, so I think it won't be too hard. With a good database and an ability to show the 10 different pottery vessels and so on, this is a very confined story, so I'm optimistic in this case.
And how will you protect this area when you're not here? We're on the side, people are living here, tourists are walking by.
Fences.
Fences.
Something like that, yeah.
Uh-huh.
No more than that.
Because I was here one morning, and I watched, I think, local kids very dangerously
sliding
themselves up, down, on the ladders, etc. So I took a picture to show you. I said, hey, what are you taking pictures of? The older guy said, so I said, he shouldn't be doing that. That's dangerous. The excavation should be taking care of this better. He said, you're right. And I got out of there.
Yeah.
That's it. Now you're known.
Now
you're known.
Now we know.
All right, so you know, let's go out to the site and take a look at some of the things that we can see in the field, and we'll continue the interview there.
Excellent. For this moment, Dr. Yuval Gadot of the Institute of Archaeology of Tel Aviv University, thank you for your time, your patience, and the sweat that you put in outside, and for that, we've been sitting in here. Very much appreciated.
Thank you for coming.